you an HR department of one trying to figure out how to balance task and strategy while keeping up with changes in regulatory compliance? Do you need a fresh outlook on old topics? Then stop what you're doing, grab your coffee, and get ready to recharge. If you have people, you have problems to solve and things to do. Your host is Brenda Neckvottle, a 20-year human resource professional, ready to explore the HR industry with veterans of business and life with fresh eyes and new ideas. Learn about the rapidly evolving changes in employment law around the country, as well as new tactics to deploy and build engagement in your workforce. If you're looking to implement new practices to make your job easier in HR, then this podcast is for you.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Best Practices in Human Resources podcast. I am Brenda, the HR lady, and I'd like to thank you for listening to the show. If you're a returning listener, thank you so much for returning for yet another episode. And if you're a first-time listener, welcome. I am here to help share with you the strategic and the tactical HR knowledge so that you can master the what and the how in this field, because let's face it, we're in the human business, and that means that there's a greater number of dynamics in the workplace to balance and manage. So I am back out on the road again, and you know what happens when I travel on the road. I dig into my community. I am around all my peers, and holy cow, I get amped up and jazzed. So you know that every time I'm down here, my energy level just gets jacked right up to the ceiling. So if you've enjoyed the show, or if you have heard something, or you know, you listen to podcast episodes for it, listen, like, help other really great people like yourselves find us. Please leave us a 5-star review. It's really awesome when those things come up. We've had some really great feedback from y'all, and you know what? It helps. It absolutely helps, because that's how the algorithm works, and it keeps bumping up the show up to the top. So the more feedback we get from you guys, positive feedback, other people who are in your shoes, who are looking for answers or looking for help or looking for that guidance, will be able to hop in and get what they need out of it. All right, this week, book release, it's happening June 5th. The Best Practices in Human Resources, How to Claw Your Way from Wannabe to VP. If you still have time, you have time until June 4th to go ahead, purchase your pre-release copy, your pre-sale copy over at BrendaTheHRLady.com. Click shop at the top. You will be entered. If you purchase the pre-sale copy, it closes at midnight on the 5th. Well, all right, 11:59, right, p.m. on the 4th. We will do a random drawing, and somebody will get a giveaway pack, a care package for me valued at way over $250. It started off, that was the limit. It is now gone up. And our VIPs, you guys get a little extra gift for me. So please, by all means, go ahead and take advantage of it. The book is dropping. Once we get the books shipped to us, they should come in sometime, hopefully within like a week after the book actually launches, and then we'll get the autograph copies out to you guys. So, but, you know, if you want to not wait or don't want an autograph copy, that's fine too. You don't have to. You can go to Amazon when they drop them. We'll have them in both places. So, but if you get them from me, you get a little extra something, something. So, which is pretty awesome. All right. Let's see what else is going on. So this is a little bit truncated, you know, and I want to keep this on a serious note, because there's a lot that's continuing to happen out in the world. It's crazy. Like, we're coming back into, you know, life kind of, we're closer to it as we once knew it, but it's not really getting there, and that's fine. It's going to take us a little while to continue to, you know, recover, recharge, return, all the rewords. But one thing that is continuing to increase, and we've seen it at 3 accounts in a very short period of time, and that is active shooter. And so every year I like to do a piece on active shooter training, and that's what this is about. As a matter of fact, David Costa, who is our second active shooter speaker on the podcast, my business partner, unfortunately passed away a year ago from a freak mountain biking accident. We were planning to start doing active shooter training, and we partnered up with the family. We've partnered up and Fight Back Nation, and we're going to be releasing something coming out here really soon. I've been in conversation with his widow, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. And so keep your eyes open in the next week or so, because you guys are going to get an opportunity to see a little bit more about what it is that we were putting together. So hang on. That is coming. Let's see. What else is going on? Let's see. All right. Naked Warrior Recovery. My friend Will, also former guest and retired Navy SEAL senior chief, actually was just recently on online. I think he did like a 6-7 minute interview on national television, and so thrilled for him. You know, a while back we had him on and he shared with us the benefits of using broad spectrum CBD. And if you haven't heard Will's interview, it's episode number 78. If you haven't tried it yet, it's amazing stuff. I just damaged my tendon in my left foot. I went and I got the CBD stick and I rolled it on over. And literally within about 15 minutes, I was feeling some pretty significant relief. And if you've ever hurt your tendon, you know it takes a long time for that stuff to heal. So it's pretty great stuff. And if you haven't tried it and you want to try it, you've heard so much about it, look, you can get 20% off your first order at nw-recovery.com by using the code NAKEDHR. And you have to listen to the podcast if you're new to understand what getting naked is all about, because there's a difference. There's getting naked, which means, like, you know, making yourself vulnerable to change and learning experience. And then there's getting naked, which just means that you are nude and you're up to no good. So this is getting naked versus getting naked. So there's a big difference. So check that out. Also, our friends over at Forest Capital Management, you know, we've been sharing some information with you guys about this company, and they can help you with a benefit option. And Forest Capital Management is an independent financial advisory firm that helps small and medium-sized businesses really optimize their retirement plans. Now, whether you sponsor a 401k, a 403b, pension, or something else, it's hard to stay up to date on the changing industry landscape. And so this company, Forest Capital Management, really helps plan sponsors navigate these changes by focusing on improving the fiduciary governance of the plan, how to benchmark plan design, and also reducing plan expenses, which is always a good thing. And so if you want to learn more about that, and actually it's well worth it, to be honest with you, go get a free plan analysis, right? Contact our friends over at the program, over at Forest Capital Management. Talk to Alex. You can reach Alex at ACLEGG at Forest, ForestCapm.com. Let me say that again. A, C as in Charlie, LEGG at Forest, ForestC, C as in Charlie, A, P as in Paul, M as in Mary.com. And you know what? Get the plan analysis is well worth it. So definitely check them out. All right. So today we've got another former SEAL on, and I hate using the word former because I know better. Once a SEAL, always a SEAL. But we've got Hector Delgado online, and Hector's got some pretty awesome information about some technology that can actually be incorporated into buildings and facilities on active shooter. And listen, I promise you right now, active shooter stuff, it's not going to go away. It just unfortunately isn't. And if you look at all the statistics and all the information, which we're going to be presenting when I make the announcement about active shooter stuff here in the next week or so, you're going to see that it's on the incline. And so, I mean, businesses really have to take that time and effort to take a step back and evaluate where they sit with all of this and how this is going to could potentially impact their own organization. So listen up, guys, some good stuff.
There are approximately 2,500 members of the U.S. Special Operations community who transition out of active duty military service every single year. The Honor Foundation has dedicated its mission to serving these elite individuals on their journey to prepare for life once they take off the uniform. In the past few years, we've begun our own journey to reach this number, launching 3 physical campuses in San Diego, California, Virginia Beach, Virginia, and near Wilmington, North Carolina, along with a virtual campus to reach members of the community anywhere on the planet. I spent 26 years in the Special Operations community as a SEAL, I graduated from THS program, I served on the board of directors, and now I'm proud to lead this organization into the future to continue assisting these transitioning service members and their families. Our dedicated team, our world-class program, and our incredible tribes of supporters are standing by to help THF alumni and future fellows, and are committed to providing the best possible support system and resources to better serve this community. Our vision for the Honor Foundation is clear: to impact every transitioning service member from the U.S. Special Operations Enterprise through our programs and support, and to be a catalyst for overhauling the entire DoD transition program. It's a big task, but the community deserves it, and we're driving full steam ahead to make this a reality. If you've been inspired with what the Honor Foundation's done in the last 5 years, I welcome you all to join us as we craft the next chapter in defining what it means to serve others with honor for life.
All right, it's time again to have another conversation with probably one of the most sensitive issues that we have out in the country right now, and that is around active shooter. And those of you know Dave Acosta, who is featured last year and also my business partner in This Voice, passed away a year ago. And we had to put the whole active shooter conversation on hold, but we are back again. I think it's an important thing, particularly, especially since it's continuing to increase across the country, not only through civil unrest, but just doing what it does. And we've got a really fantastic guest by the name of Hector Delgado. Hector is another retired SEAL and a knowledge specialist, former federal agent as well, working for Alert Systems. And we met, we didn't know we met a few years ago, and then we wound up reconnecting and went, oh yeah, that's right, we did wind up meeting you. So welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show, Brenda.
Yeah, no problem. Now, are you down in Florida?
Yep, we're down. I'm down in Jupiter, Florida, probably 40 minutes south of the Navy SEAL Museum.
Yes, and if you have an opportunity, definitely go visit the Navy SEAL Museum. It is well worth. I've been trying to get down there for years, but I've seen so many pictures that I keep frothing at the mouth every time I see one. It's like, I need to go. So it's going to happen.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Personal tour. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Would you mind doing me a quick favor and kind of letting people know a little bit about your background so that they kind of get some context as to who you are and what you've seen and all that other good stuff?
Sure, absolutely. Well, my background is I did 29 years in the Navy, both in active and reserve components as a Navy SEAL. I served at SEAL Team 2, SEAL Team 3, SEAL Team 4, 18, Special Operations Command South, SOC Cent, a number of commands, and retired in 2017. And when I wasn't on active duty, I started my federal law enforcement career as a deputy U.S. United States Marshal out of Southern District of New York, Manhattan, then transferred down to Miami and ended up in West Palm Beach. And eventually 9/11 struck, and I rolled over and transferred to Homeland Security Investigations, where I retired 2 years ago as a special agent. Throughout that career, I trained hundreds and hundreds of folks in several disciplines, but one of my favorite was that critical incident response, that active shooter response. And I felt that as a first responder, there was some information, critical information that I would have liked to have received. Then I started thinking about what about students, teachers, employees? And so we took some commercial off-the-shelf equipment. We began to professionalize it, innovate, applied for a patent, which was granted in April of 2020, and now we're scaled out into 11 states. Putting the resume aside, my daughter did not want to go to school on the anniversary of Stoneman Douglas. That was a problem for me, it was a problem for my team, but now we're doing something to combat this horrible epidemic that's affecting our nation.
Yeah, that it is, and it's only increasing, which is, if you were to look at the statistics, it's a continuous upward slope.
It is, it's continuing at an alarming rate, and again, like you and I both know, this can happen anywhere, places of worship, FedEx, I mean, anywhere. And I don't know what's affecting it. And sometimes I don't even go into, you know, what these triggers are. We just know that we should be prepared. And my focus is.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The only upward slope I want to follow is crypto. That's about it. It's the only upward slope I want to follow. That's right. I know, right? Get in now. All right. So can you tell us a little bit about Alert Systems, the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So ASR Alert Systems is it's a system. We partner with law enforcement and with obviously with civilians, so we can provide an immediate notification of when there's an active shooter event that's taking place. So basically, what we do is we go into organizations, whether it's a government building, a municipal building, a school, a place of worship, and we put our wireless panic buttons and pendants into the school. And I'll use the school as an example. And then we also provide a console that we put into the responding jurisdictional authority, which would be the police or the sheriff's office. And then we train our employees, the employees of, God forbid, there was an incident, what to do. And sometimes they have protocols already. But what we want to do is we want to cut down on time. People, when there's an incident, asking them to pick up the phone, call 911. There's so many you lose all fine motor skills. You can't think clearly. So we're trying to take that phone call away from them and make it for them immediately.
Got it. And so when you say you have these devices in rooms, are they, like schools, for instance, are they only accessible to the teachers, or is this something that that the school also trains their students to use as well?
It's a great question. So it all depends on the district. It depends on the temperature of the country, what state, because our system's always going to be designed for employees or end users only. It's not for the public. So depending on the school, certain private schools that we have, you know, they want them accessible by all students, and others, it's just for teachers and they're placed in certain areas. Understanding that teachers could only do a few things. Those doors are usually locked or should be locked. And then they have to act on trying to get the kids into certain safe space. And then of course, make an initiation. So when we look at organizations and entities, we try and understand what are their protocols. Are they trained and are they moving, or do they have a plan? And then we integrate our system in a strategic and tactical placement and methodology.
Right. Now, one of the things that because this audience is HR, right? HR and business leaders. One of the first things that I know that they're going to come to their mind, because it came to my mind, is that if you make this unit available for the end user, which I think is awesome, I think that's a great idea. And then it broadcasts, I'm assuming it broadcasts like on a text message to a cell phone and gives people updated information as to what they shouldn't do, how, you know, like, yeah, okay, good.
I can tell you what it does is when that button's hit, it immediately sends a text message to the end users. It sends an email message to the end users. It simultaneously sends an alert to law enforcement dispatch centers. And that's it provides them, it tells them the physical location, the exact room where the button was hit, and it provides a floor plan and an overview. So again, those that are under attack can at least look at it and say, maybe I'm not going to move out of this room. Maybe I'm going to shelter in place, or the incident's happening over there. I have time to get away from the building.
Yep.
So we want to provide them, you know, situational awareness so they can make that decision.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that would go through, you know, doubters or people that are, you know, critical thinkers, is that, you know, if you train your employees as to what to expect, and if an active shooter is the employee, wouldn't they have the upper hand in understanding how any training or any system would work that they could counter that?
Well, you would say, you know, when you're an organization, you have different types of threats. You have external threats, you have internal threats. And that's just the truth. And that's the ground truth for any organization. So what we do is we want to make sure that when we install our system and how we developed it, we make sure that there's certain false alarm mitigations built in, there's tampers, there's the ability to monitor and make sure not only we, but of course, because it's monitored 24/7, but those that have administrative rights are aware of the system, because this is a life safety system. So it needs to have that smart diagnostic self-testing capability.
Got it. Yeah. One of the things that I sat in on a course years ago, it was a long time ago, and I thought it was a good course on, you know, how to train your employees to respond. They had ideas about, you know, make sure everybody understands this, you know, a special password. So that way, you know, when the all clear is given and, you know, they're still a little panicked and they don't want to open the door, that they can use the password. But then it's like, but if it's an active shooter, wouldn't they know the password and trying to use that to to counter, right? So some of those things. And so I think some people, I think there is a misunderstanding around, and from what I know, is that there's only typically, well, first off, there's only one way a bullet can fly, and that's in the direction of whatever the weapon is pointed in, right? Mm-hmm. Can't go sideways. There's no magic bullet or anything like that. So if shooters only focused in on one area, likely they're only honing in on one objective, and that is unfortunately to do as much damage. They're not thinking about what's behind them or what's to the side of them, or, you know, getting maybe to the next level or their escape route or anything. They're only in the, when they're typically in the moment, they're only focused in on one thing. They're not focused in on combating everybody in the building.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, they're, when you have, when you're in an event like that, it's pure chaos. And people, yeah, who, you know, if there is a plan and they have a plan, because again, you can't really coordinate it, but if you're in a work setting and you have either practiced your plan or you've spoken about it, or the organization has dedicated a certain room that you can at least hide until law enforcement comes, that's great. At least you're ahead. Most organizations don't really have a plan. The extent that they do is they make sure you watch a video for the year and your supervisor signs off on that certificate. But I always recommend a few things. Number one, keep the plan simple. In other words, getting, yes, into code words and different colors under duress, you forget all of that, you know, including cipher locks or combinations to get into a door under pressure. So those are things that you want to kind of just keep it simple, keep it straightforward. And so people remember, you will never, under these incidents, you're not going to rise to the occasion. You're just going to fall back to the level of training that you've received. And right, that's important. That's very important for people to understand.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think if there's anything that you would recommend that a company train, like to teach their people what they need to do if they're encountering an active shooter threat, what would it be?
The best thing to do, of course, is to immediately be aware of where that shooter is. Because you can only do two things, right? And that video that people say, run, hide, fight, doesn't mean that you're gonna run first and then you're gonna hide and then you're gonna fight. It can happen, fight, run, and then hide.
Right.
So you're either gonna fight to survive or you're going to flee, okay?
Yeah.
So the best thing I would do, of course, and the first thing I would recommend is, first and foremost, know your surroundings. You go to work every day, okay? And I know many of us are creatures of routine, but understand where are your exits. And again, I'm not trying to scare people or make them into a SWAT team operator, but understand, you know, where are my exits? Where am I sitting? Number one, understand that your coworkers, and we all go through, you know, issues, emotional issues, got the pandemic, and you know how people behave, and you know when someone's having a good day and a bad day, but be aware of your surroundings, where people are suffering through certain type of situations. And you'll know when they're starting to act very, very different. And those are times, again, that you have to really start looking at what type of behaviors is going on and at what point do I address that? And again, I'm not saying, hey, let's call HR every 2 minutes, but you really need to know who your coworkers are and understand their mindset. And those are two things that I recommend. Another thing that I would recommend, and again, I'm kind of going sideways on this, but when it comes to HR, I've provided advice. You know, when it comes to hiring and firing, and when you get hired, you usually are going to go and be engaged with HR. And then usually the second time and the last time is you're going to get called back there. So I've always counseled folks to maybe do that offsite, mm-hmm, termination. So you're not, you know, building up, you know, because many of my HR folks that I've spoken to, they're nervous. They're going to do something which is uncomfortable, whether you have on-site security or not. So we're starting to provide some pendants so they can carry them and have them either under the desk or with them so they can at least, God forbid something happens, they can alert authorities or their internal security force.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be way more strategic now on how you separate with employees and deal with, you know, disciplinary action. And you have to keep the human inside of it. It's like, if you want to make sure that, I mean, it's hard because, you know, typically a lot of the cases that are out there, and from a federal standpoint, you know, it'd be interesting to, if you've seen something that actually counters this or is slightly different, but typically people will go back when their lives start spinning out of control, they'll go back to the very, the group of organizations or the people or the person that actually started to make that chaos happen. And if that happens because of a termination at work or as a disciplinary action, whether it was fair or unfair, they're going to remember that. And that's typically where they start.
Yep. No, that's a very good point. You know, there's so many triggers that make people snap. And whether it's a jealous boyfriend or girlfriend, and it's not only males, it could be females, you know, but yeah, they revert back. There's something that makes them, that is that ultimate trigger. Additionally, you know, in my research, I've also seen that many of these active shooter killers and cowards conduct their own reconnaissance intelligence. They're coming in locked and loaded. They have a plan. They want to cause as much destruction as possible. So what we try and do is we try and put them, take them out of predator mode. And that's one of the reasons why when our system goes off, which you could see in our website, the demo, that there's a number of redundancies. You've got sirens and strobes going off. You've got a text. You've got an email. You've got, you know, the police are being notified. You've got the consoles going off. So it's those redundancies that I want to force those killers to get them out of that predator mode and let them know, hey, something's going on that I didn't expect. The gig is up. So, and then you should take their lives.
Yeah, exactly. So it's wise to make sure that you continue to treat people like a human and not down talk to them, even though they may not necessarily like the outcome of it. But if you can keep that level of, they'll probably still respect you. You have an easier, especially if they're a problematic employee, if they've got, you know, past history of violence, if they got priors, you know, those things take into account. People have listening to the show have heard that, you know, I was in a situation where we had a potential active shooter employee. He was demonstrating the steps. And, you know, one of the things that we actually have never done before in the show, and I think might be a good idea, and you can help us with this, and you help walk through the various stages that somebody enters into before they actually hit that last stage and become an active shooter?
Well, again, there are several triggers and factors that make these people act and do. Some of it could be the economy, you know, where the economy starts going down and now we have to make decisions to lay people off, and its effects. They have families. It could be something in that respect. But these folks usually, they usually have access and placement to weapons. And it doesn't have to be a gun. It could be a machete. We're seeing a lot of that in Europe. And you're going to see a change in behavior. You're going to see them become extremely introverted. You're going to see them, you know, start hoarding and packing things. And just, you're going to see that if you know your employees, your coworkers, you're going to see a change in that behavior. And it's just very sad because, you know, many of these folks, and it happened in Virginia Beach, they were long-term employees, you know, 20 plus employees that have been there, they're institutional, and all of a sudden they just snap and off they go. So again, I also recommend, and this is highly recommend, I highly recommend this is, you may not be, a person may not be a fan of weapons and has never shot and just doesn't like weapons. That's fine. But I know in the past when I've taught my active shooter seminars, I've brought the weapons in so they can see it. I want someone to recognize what a weapon is, what a weapon looks like when it's working and is functional, what a weapon looks like when it's not in battery and it's got a malfunction, because that might be the only time that you have to run, to hide, or to fight, because it's about survival. There's no choreographing this. So I think having, you know, weapons recognition is important. Understanding that if you have some special skill, whether it's jujitsu or boxing or, you know, because what we think we can do, but what we can physically do are two different things. So I always tell people to keep, you know, to maintain those skills. If it's shooting, great. It's great that you have a gun, but when was the last time you shot? And have you shot under stress? And where do you carry that gun? And is corporate policy allow you to have that gun in the office? So there's a lot of different things, but I think many people try and have self-improvement habits and skills. It's great that you have them, but maintain them, because there may come a time when you're going to have to need them and use them.
You know, after after Virginia Beach, it was interesting because I was only just a couple of miles away from there. And it was amazing just to see what was happening on the streets. I mean, I got stopped in the middle of the road, and they wouldn't let us go anywhere. And then all of a sudden they just released us. It was like, what the heck? And it was because they had all EMS, you know, dedicated, and it was crazy. But the very next day, once I heard about what was going on, the very next day, I'm driving on my way to go do something. And I wanted to go to McDonald's, pull in, grab a cup of coffee. So as I'm going through, I'm kind of going through a little bit of a sketch area. And I see this woman walking into a building with this other guy staring her down. And it was very clear that they didn't know each other. But the way the guy was, he was carrying something, and it was kind of like this. And it looked like a Glock. Right. And I know Glock. I own a Glock. I own two, actually. And he's walking like, and he's just kind of like holding it really strange. And I'm looking at it. And I'm like, that is a square barrel. That is absolutely a square barrel. And so I immediately got on the horn with 911. I said, hey, listen, can you go check this out? This guy's like watching this woman walk into a building. It looks off. It could be nothing, but you know what? Let's just check it out, because we don't want another incident. They found him. They pulled him over. They called me back and they said, we thought the same thing. We thought exactly the same thing. He says, you want to know what it was? I said, yeah. He says, it was a drill handle that was modified. I'm like, Who has a square drill handle? But anyway, he's like, you know what? He's like, good on you for keeping an eye out for something like that. And, you know, the fact that he was watching this other woman going in, they actually wound up talking to the women. And she said, yeah, I felt really uncomfortable with that guy, because it was just, you know, it was kind of like the equivalent of getting elevator eyes, you know, up and down, you know, kind of thing. But anyway, they found her, and they double checked that he wasn't, you know, imposing or, you know, a problem. But you know what? That's how you keep people safe, is that you act when you see something, even if you're wrong.
I think that you're spot on. And I think that's part of the problem, is that many people say, well, that's safety's division, or that's security's role. I'm not involved in that, even though they may see something, even though someone should be wearing a badge, because that's company policy, and they're not wearing the credentials, instead of challenging them because they look unfamiliar, they might be lost. No, people are uncomfortable to challenge each other. And I think what you said is a great point, you know, because you know the normal. You're in this workspace, you know the parking lot. You're immediately going to pick up on something that doesn't look normal. And so many people decide to just not say anything. And again, you know the saying, see something, say something.
Yeah.
Even when they terminate someone, you know, okay, Larry's been terminated. Well, does everybody know that? You know, what's the protocol? You know, when you've taken Larry's credentials and his access badge and all, but yet people keep seeing Larry parked there at 8:30 in the morning in the car, just stewing and waiting.
And nobody knows, because nobody's saying anything about it.
Right. And there he is, you know, with the shotgun. So these are just things that, you know, most HR folks understand, they get it, but they're not alone. They need help, and they need it. They need it to be enforced as well.
Yeah. You know, at the very minimum, let's go back to Larry here real quick. At the very minimum, you know, when you release somebody, and especially if you've got some form of concern about that person, at least let the management team know about it. Like, keep, put them on alert. You know, after we had our situation, I had to meet with the entire management staff, and we didn't give them details, but we did say that there was behavior that took place that was inappropriate. That there was cause for concern for safety for the workplace. And we let them kind of read between the lines on that one. And that, you know, look, the access to company property was completely shut off. We were working with law enforcement. And, you know, if anybody ever sees this person, immediately stop what you're doing and let us know. So then that way we can devise a plan on how to move forward. And as soon as I said that, somebody said, well, okay, so we get that. Do you think that this person is a threat? And do you think this person, you know, do we have reason to be concerned for our lives? And I immediately knew that the answer was yes. But at the same time, you know, we're in a secured facility, so that's going to be very, very hard for somebody to get in. But I also knew that if they constantly focused on the answer being, yes, we do, because we really just didn't know, to be honest with you, and the person lived an hour away, that if we said yes, they would actually miss a lot of critical steps that could put more people at harm's risk, right? So some of these communications decisions that you have to make, you've got to weigh everything. And I was faced with an answer I was not prepared to give. And I said, no, we don't believe so. I said, we're in a secured facility. Right. Law enforcement is on top of it. Even though in the back of my mind, I knew that it was probably still a risk, but not a very great one. But I didn't want to say that because I wanted people to feel comfortable working for the place. I wanted to make sure that people kept their eyes focused on the ball because we had hazardous chemicals that you can die from, right? And yeah. I did not want that to happen. And even the vice president at the time looked at me and he says, boy, was that the right answer you made? I said, dude, I almost didn't know what to say, but I said, no, because if they see us being calm, they'll be calm.
I think that's a very good example. It's funny, we just developed, I'll show you right now. We have this is our police button and it's the active shooter button, you know. You open it up and you hit the button and immediately, and it's wireless. But your example brings up a very good point because there were organizations that were experiencing similar situations and scenarios. And this is a life safety. Hey, this is the active shooter button. Maybe that's not the time to hit this one. But when you have an issue that's, whether you're under duress or you have an emergency that you want to keep internal, you want to control the narrative, you want to make the call because you're not sure 100%. We developed a system as well for that. So, you know, the security, the plant manager, security officers, or designated management can respond and address the issue that hasn't elevated into an active shooter. Because many times, even in a hospital that we're installed in, 80%, 85% of their issues are handled internally. But then there's always going to be that, you know, 15%, 10% that they are going to need police immediately. Yep. So that's one thing we're doing.
Yeah. No, it, you know, and you have to think through everything and you also have to rely on your gut. You can't rely on your fear. You have to rely on your gut. Your gut's 90% of the time accurate. And if you think somebody's going to, you know, go in a direction, I mean, look what happened in San Bernardino. So the whole San Bernardino shooting years ago took place because everybody in the neighborhood saw the couple stocking up on munitions, people coming over, having these, you know, weird, I mean, a lot of reports afterwards coming out in all the things that they heard, but nobody said anything because they didn't want to be labeled.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and yeah, you know, as an individual, that can be problematic, but I would much rather have somebody be angry at me for questioning something rather than my never living a normal life because I could have done something and didn't.
Yeah. Well, you know, your point there, even if you look at Stoneman Douglas, the tragedy that happened down in Parkland, you know, you had school officials that were managing the discipline. They were conducting their own level. When I say discipline, you know, what might be considered a felony outside of school was not considered a felony in school. Mm-hmm. So lack of communication between school officials and police, you know, lack of communication between the school and the sheriffs. So it's you know, so when you have organizations that we say, hey, here's school, you've got my daughter for eight hours out of the day, and you're conducting your own level of discipline. Meanwhile, that's a threat, and it continues, and that type of behavior continues to grow and grow, but yet you're not alerting the first responders. That's a problem as well. So I think, you know, I'm hoping that 9/11 Commission and the Stoneman Douglas Commission, you know, those findings and those reports are reviewed and those recommendations are used in the future.
Yeah. I mean, at the very minimum, like, you know, if companies are nervous about, you know, moving forward and they get this mindset of like, oh, you know, what are our employees are going to think? And are they going to be fearful that this isn't a safe place to work? And those are some real things to go through, real challenges to think about. Look, at the very minimum, look, have PD come in and have them do an inspection of your office, give them a floor map, because you do that, they're going to register that in whatever system it is. I can't remember off the top of my head.
No, that's a very good point, because this nonsense this past year of defunding the police, and I'm, look, there were mistakes made by law enforcement, but you can't paint the broad brush with a select few.
Right.
And having the ability, and I'm very proud to say that that's what we're doing here with ASR, is where we're able to put a system in and invite law enforcement to do that walkthrough, get them with the client, get them with the school to get that bond back in right. motion. Where school now, the police are there, they're getting, they're physically can see it. There's an overlay. They know where the buttons are at. And God forbid there's an incident. They know, they already have some, you know, inside knowledge of the floor plan and how to respond effectively.
Yep, exactly. Well, Hector, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining. Now, where can people find you guys?
Well, okay. On the net, our website is www.asralertsystems.com. So it's asralertsystems.com. And we're down here in Jupiter, Florida, but we're in 11 states and growing quickly. And I just want to tell everyone, again, thank you, Brenda, for having me on. Everyone, please stay safe, stay healthy, and just be aware of your surroundings.
Thank you so very much. It's been great having you on.
I'll see you down at Muster.
Yes, you will.
Take care and let's stay in touch.
Thanks.